Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Sergeant-at-Arms will be instructed to bring in the absent members. This morning's prayer is being offered by the Reverend John Steer from the Autumn Ridge Church in Rochester, Minnesota. After the prayer, please remain standing for the pledge.
This is the day that the Lord has made, so let us rejoice and be glad in it with that grand truth in our minds. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this land of Minnesota, for its beauty and its people, for its opportunities and its challenges. We commend to you the men and women of this Senate who represent the people of this state. Grant them your wisdom and understanding. Endow them with your mercy and compassion. Enable them to work in harmony, and where there are honest disagreements, to express these graciously. We pray for the families of all who serve in this place, that you would bless them, for their marriages, that you would strengthen them. We lovingly lift before you those senators who may be facing personal crisis, that they may discover that your grace is sufficient. Heavenly Father, we pray for the citizens of Minnesota who are serving our nation in Iraq and Afghanistan. We ask that you would watch over them and their families and keep them safe. Grant them a sense of satisfaction in the knowledge that they're building a better future for these countries. We pray for the business before this Senate today, that your name be hallowed and your will be done. May our state be a place where creativity is encouraged and excellence strived for. May we always remember that to whom much is given, much is expected. Please give us a society that's marked by compassion, that lifts up the fallen and offers help to those who cannot help themselves. And now the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you his peace. Amen.
Allegiance to the flag, public for which it stands.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Anderson, Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Hahn, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Engelbretson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogamiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Under the second order of business, executive and official communications, please make note of the one communication that was received from Senator Bach as printed in the agenda. Moving to the fifth order of business, the reports of committees. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would move that the committee report printed in the agenda be adopted.
Senator Koch moves adoption of the committee reports printed in the agenda. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. Second reading for those bills printed in the agenda. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. Second reading for those House files printed in the agenda. Second reading. Eighth order of business, the introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Those bills will be referred as indicated with one change that would be on page 4 of the Senate bill introductions for Senate file number 208. It is currently referred to Committee on Education. The change would be referred to the Committee on State Government Innovations and Veterans. First reading referred as indicated with the one change. Under the ninth order of business, under motions and resolutions, there are three authors' motions that are printed in the agenda. We will take those as one motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Those motions are adopted. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, remaining on the order of business of motions and resolutions, I move that the Senate now take up the consent calendar.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President and members. On the consent calendar is Senate File 32. I would like to at least offer a brief explanation and answer any questions if there are any. This was a bill that we heard in Education Committee last week and was passed without objection. Many of you may remember in 2009 we passed a major reform to the charter school law. Charter schools are, of course, public schools that are operating under a slightly different governing structure. They have a board that just oversees the one school. We have about, in Minnesota, 150 charter schools. Some, 35,000 students attend these schools. And Minnesota has been the leader in the country in charter school education. We were the first state to empower charters to conduct business as a public school, and we've remained a leader in this arena. The law that we passed in 2009 was a reform of the process by which charter schools are authorized. All charter schools need to have a sponsor, what we used to call a sponsor, we now call an authorizer, with whom the school has a contract for performance. And that authorizer is empowered to oversee and hold the school accountable for the performance under the charter. What we did in 2009 in reforming that process, we also set a deadline of end of June of this year for all the charter schools to be authorized under the new structure. And we felt that was a sufficient time frame to allow the charter schools to make a transition, to find a new authorizer or a new sponsor, and to comply with the law. What has happened is that the Department of Education, which was empowered to oversee this process and developing that process and enacting and implementing it, it's taken a little bit longer than they anticipated. And so right now, as we in the old structure, we had 45 authorizers or sponsors of charter schools. Today, under the change in law, we only have 15. And it leaves, at this point, approximately 60-some existing charter schools who do not have an authorizer. And that those 64 schools serve some 13,000 students. So what we did in the Education Committee was simply extend the deadline to comply with the change in the law out an additional year. So instead of the deadline being at the end of June of this year, it would be the end of June of next year. So this would give, we believe, sufficient amount of time for all the existing charter schools to find an authorizer under the new law and allow those students to continue their education uninterrupted. This does not change any of the provisions of the charter school reform that was adopted in 2009. So when we had the discussion of this in Senator Olson's committee, this was passed without controversy and without opposition, and I would encourage your support for the bill. Thank you.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you probably remember, the last several years, reforming and bringing a greater sense of responsibility to our charter schools, and in particular the authorizers, has been one of the things that was done and completed, as Senator Hahn mentioned. So I think this is, and when we do make those changes in many ways, sometimes we don't have a good grasp of exactly how the timeline is going to fit into those types of changes. So I would ask members to support this. The good part of the law is that the authorizers, those that are going to be responsible for the charter schools, have taken on or will take on a much larger role and responsibility. And so I would support Senator Hand's motion.
Further discussion on Senate File 55? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 55 its third reading.
Senate File Number 55, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. Being 64 ayes and no nays, Senate File 55 passes. It is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Koch.
Madam President, remaining under order of business of motions and resolutions, and pursuant to Rule 26, I would designate that Senate File Number 4 a special order for immediate consideration.
Senate File Number 4 is Number 3 on general orders. Senator Koch, you wish to discuss the bill, explain the bill? You've designated a special order.
Well, thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 4 is a bill to abolish the ban on new nuclear power in the state of Minnesota. State law currently prohibits the Minnesota PUC from approving a certificate of need for the construction of new nuclear power plants. I believe it's time to allow carbon-free, cost-effective, safe, and reliable new nuclear power plants to be considered when the Commission looks at Minnesota's future energy needs. I always like to start this a little bit with what this bill is not. This bill is not deciding to repeal the prohibition. It is not a decision to construct a new nuclear power plant in the state of Minnesota. Lifting the ban would allow electricity providers and the PUC to consider all options. It is not a preference for nuclear power, and there is no expediting of the permitting process, and there is no automatic rate recovery for nuclear power in this bill. What the bill is, the bill is a bipartisan bill. The committee had testifiers in favor of the bill on both sides of the aisle. Congressman Tim Walz and Congressman Eric Paulson have both expressed support for lifting the ban in the state of Minnesota. The language of this bill was amended onto an energy policy bill just 2 years ago when the makeup of this Senate floor was a bit different, and it passed overwhelmingly, 42 to 24. The Obama administration has taken a very positive stance on nuclear power. He's appointed a Blue Ribbon Commission to consider the waste issues, and they have announced federal loan guarantees for construction of two new plants in the state of Georgia. This bill is also about jobs, members, and we hear a lot of that. But we heard from both business and labor in support of this bill in committee. Labor came in and talked about the number of construction jobs and also permanent jobs that the building of a new plant would provide. Minnesota businesses came in and they talked about needing reliable, cost-effective energy and concern about their rates in doing business in the state of Minnesota. And then we also heard from Minnesota businesses employing hundreds of Minnesotans currently in the state of Minnesota that are engaged in the nuclear industry. And yet we're not able to have this conversation in the very state where they are headquartered. I believe very strongly that Minnesota should move into the future, or should not move into the future, with one hand tied behind their back. And I believe that currently that's what's happening. Minnesotans have said over and over that they would like, they want, reliable energy. They want to be able to walk into the room, turn on the lights, and have it work. They also want energy to be affordable. Minnesotans are struggling with a great number of things right now, and they need to keep their rates low. But members, I would also argue that it's extremely important, especially in our current economic situation, that we have reliable energy in the state of Minnesota to power our industry, to power our manufacturing. We went up to Hibbing last Friday, and we heard about the tremendous energy needs by the different taconite plants, the tremendous energy that they use to power those plants. And the cost and the burden that it puts on businesses when their rates go up. So I would argue that now, even more important than ever, we need to make energy policy decisions that keeps rates low and keeps energy reliable in the state of Minnesota. This bill is not a permit for construction, members. It is simply a permit for discussion, and I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 4. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Madam President. Just a couple of comments. We've been talking about this for a long time. But I think, once again, and especially this year, this is the wrong bill at the wrong time. I think it's the wrong priority. It's kind of ironic to me that the first real bill or major bill, with apologies to Senator Hahn, I didn't realize that bill would be up. This is, other than that, the first bill being heard in the new Senate this year, in a time when we have a huge budget deficit and a crisis of jobs in our state. And it's a diversion from those issues, in my view. We need jobs now. We don't need jobs 20 years from now. This bill will not offer any jobs anytime soon, except for maybe a few lawyers. It's also the wrong time because we're still stuck in a recession. Now, we all know that things are going really well on Wall Street, but on Main Street, not so well, and that our constituents are still suffering from job losses and economic insecurity. And we simply cannot embark on a path of the most expensive source of electricity known in the United States, which is to build a new nuclear plant. It's the wrong time because it's too expensive. The current generation of new nuclear plants is going to cost us anywhere. If you look at a couple of newspaper articles that I had passed out, anywhere from $5 to $12 to $17 to $22 billion to build a new nuclear plant, and none of them have actually been constructed yet. So those costs could grow. It's more than our ratepayers should be forced to be talking about or looking at this time. It's too expensive, and we don't need it. It's just strange to me why we have so much emphasis on this subject, again, when it shouldn't be the priority of our state right now. We have bigger problems, but also because there's nobody who really needs this bill. No electric utility companies in the state of Minnesota have come forward and asked for this bill to be passed. None of them testified in committees. We have a very well thought out and long-time process in our state law that calls for integrated resource plans. Our largest state utility, which is probably the only one that owns the current nuclear plants, Xcel, has a plan that they've filed that says, here's what our energy needs and predictions are up until the year 2025. And they are not asking for any new baseload plants, and they are not proposing building any new nuclear plants. So again, we don't need this. It's too expensive. It's not right for Minnesota. I think it's wrong for us to focus on nuclear expansion right now. Let's let those other states experiment on the new generation of nuclear plants, and then maybe someday they'll be right for Minnesota. But right now, We don't have any successful examples of this new generation of nuclear plants anywhere in the country being built, and we still don't have a solution to nuclear waste storage. And I've been debating this issue since I was first elected 19 years ago, which is kind of hard to believe, that this was the biggest debate the first year I walked into the legislature, and here we are again. And at that time, this moratorium was put into law because we didn't have a solution for the nuclear waste. Well, guess what? We don't have a solution for the nuclear waste in 2011. Nothing has changed. Actually, what has changed is that Yucca Mountain is now canceled. So at that time, we had some hopes that maybe it would be open and we would have a place to send our nuclear waste. Now, that's not even an option. So we have no place for this to go. And we have a Department of Energy that is looking back at plans that were in place in the 1980s at other states for permanent storage, including Minnesota. And you'll see on this map that's passed out in the 1980s, sites that were suggested in Minnesota to be the national waste dump for nuclear waste. We don't want to go back to those discussions, but that's what's on the table for future nuclear waste storage. Finally, this is the wrong time for Minnesota because we have embarked on a different path in Minnesota, and it's a path to success. It's a path to jobs. It's a path to clean energy. In 2007, we passed bills nearly unanimously with broad bipartisan support that set us on a path to develop our own resources, like wind and solar and biomass made from Minnesota crops and forests. And we've begun that path, but we haven't completed it. We've already seen jobs created, and we know that that path will bring jobs now, that during the recession, one of the fastest growing areas of the economy was in clean energy jobs, while everything else was stagnating. So we have a path, a vision for Minnesota's future that has broad public support. It's creating jobs now. It's working. It was passed almost unanimously, signed by Governor Pawlenty. Why are we wasting our time going backwards? I don't understand it. And finally, as you all know, we're in a position now with a new governor and a new lieutenant governor, the lieutenant governor who happened to be the author of many of those groundbreaking visionary laws that were passed in 2007. And this bill will not become law. So, members, I urge you to vote against it. I do have an amendment I'd like to offer as well.
Senator Anderson, are you offering the amendment at this time? Because then we need the addendum.
Yes, Madam Chair. I have the A13 amendment.
Senator Anderson offers the A13 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Anderson moves to amend Senate file number 4 as follows, page 1 after line 7. This is the A13 amendment.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. The A13 amendment is a ratepayer protection amendment. Given that I can see the writing on the wall, and I expect that this bill may pass today, I think that it's critically important that this amendment be attached to it. And what you can see, if you've read the news about what's happening with nuclear plant construction and nuclear plant permits around the country, is that the current generation of new nuclear plants are only moving forward when ratepayers are being forced to take up much of the financial risk. And we must not let that happen in Minnesota. If we ever go forward with building a new nuclear plant, we need to make sure that ratepayers are protected from exorbitant rate increases. And that's what this amendment would do. The first section says that the Public Utilities Commission could not allow costs for the licensing process and the construction process for a new nuclear plant to be paid by ratepayers until the plant is actually up and operating and producing and selling electricity. So it says It has to have been operated for at least a month at a monthly load capacity factor of at least 85%. Section B says that rate recovery will not be allowed for cost overruns. And so those are the two. It's pretty straightforward. This is the Ratepayer Protection Amendment. In states like Florida, Florida passed a special law that allowed this type of upfront rate recovery for nuclear plants before they were permitted, before they were built. In Texas, ratepayers have been asked to have increases of over 9% for plants that have yet to be built. We need to make sure that we make a promise to our ratepayers in Minnesota we will not gouge them, even if we go down the path of a new nuclear plant. So I would urge you to vote for this amendment. And I would ask for a roll call vote.
Discussion on the A13 amendment, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Anderson, for your amendment. However, would have been happy to speak with you prior to this about different amendments. I do have some issues with this amendment, members. To start with, this language would be sort of keeping a de facto moratorium in place. If you don't allow for any cost recovery, it becomes very difficult to finance. There is no argument here that nuclear power plants are expensive to build, but when you factor in that they run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they are very cost-effective and low-cost energy, particularly compared to wind, solar, and other forms of energy. But the building of the plant is indeed expensive. This amendment also would add additional cost to the projects, because when you allow for no rate recovery prior to finishing of the project, you add to the interest costs for if a company, and in this scenario, likely they would not, but if a company would come forward and try to build, they add tremendous cost to the project in interest costs. And so the financing of these projects has been very carefully worked out. We heard testimony in committee about the different projects in Georgia, and they do, there is, the federal government has come forward with some loan guarantees. There is some assistance or some really, it's more financing assistance that is given, not from the ratepayers, but in the form of loan guarantees. But this, members, would keep the moratorium in place. It would be a de facto moratorium, and I would oppose the amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I just want to clarify that this amendment would not prevent rate recovery for a nuclear plant once it's built, and once it's producing electricity and sending that through the wires to the customers, then they would pay for those costs that were reasonable and prudent. And that's as it should be, like any other power plant. What this will prohibit is ratepayers being forced to pay those costs in advance, especially given the uncertainty and the cost overruns and the inflation and the additional costs that they've been forced to pay in other states. We want to make sure we protect our ratepayers here in Minnesota.
Further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. A question, Senator Anderson, would you yield for a question?
Senator Anderson.
Thank
Senator
you.
Anderson, will you yield for
my
a question?
My question to you is, you referred to the Energy Standard Bill that was passed in the Senate in 2007, there were three in this body that voted against that. I happen to be one of those. At that time, there was a discussion about ratepayers and what they would be expected to pay under this the new standards that we were at that time mandating our energy, electric energy, coal-burning energy folks to have to come up with. There was discussion that those ratepayers would be paying an exorbitant rate, not an exorbitant, I guess, but over 30%, and I think it's come true now that the rates have gone up because of that standard that was brought forth by your body, and it was also signed into law, I understand it, by the governor. It doesn't necessarily we always agree with what the governor's, whoever, whatever party they are, but my question to you is, there was discussion about ratepayers having to pay for those energy standards, whether it be electricity, whether it be ethanol, whether it be hydro, whether it be wind energy, were they expected to pay for the development of those at that time?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. That's a very good question. In 2007, we passed the Renewable Energy Standard, which, as you mentioned, and that's the one that calls for 25% renewables by 2020. And we actually, number one, in that bill, as it passed, it has an what we called an off-ramp for the utilities, that if they found that it was too costly to ratepayers to comply with the law, they could go to the Public Utilities Commission and ask for relief. No utilities have done that. There's no evidence that the Renewable Energy Standard has actually increased ratepayers' rates in Minnesota. In fact, Xcel's testified over the last few years that adding more wind into their portfolio has actually saved ratepayers' money. Another really critical piece of that 2007 law and the Next Generation Energy Act was Senator Dibble's bill on energy efficiency, which required our utilities to save more energy. And there's a lot of evidence that that's saved ratepayers and businesses and homeowners thousands and thousands of dollars. So those laws have actually been good for our ratepayers, besides being good policy in other ways. Oh, and Madam President, sorry.
Senator Anderson.
There's one other thing I wanted to say. The Public Utilities Commission, when you build a renewable project or a wind farm or a coal plant or any other kind of energy project, they usually don't allow you to recover those construction costs up front for those either. So that's typical, but I want to make sure that we say that we promise our ratepayers that for a nuclear plant because of what's happened in other states, just to give them a guarantee that they won't be gouged because of this.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Madam President, members, Senator Kolk, you said that they can't afford to build this without the public ratepayers being billed it. This Wall Street Journal article that was handed out quotes Exelon, the nation's biggest nuclear operator, is considering building two reactors on an undeveloped site in Texas. It said the cost could be $5 to $6.5 billion each. The plants would be operated as, quote, merchant plants and thus would not have utility customers on the hook to pay for them. So in other words, in Texas, they're able to do this without ratepayers being on the hook. And I wanted to add one thing to Senator Anderson's thing. We don't have to go to other states to find out about ratepayers being billed. I think a lot of us, those who are Xcel Energy or earlier NSP customers, in the 1980s, we did pay for the Tyrone nuclear power plant, which I'm sure you all know the name of because it doesn't exist. Wisconsin was going to build a nuclear power plant, Tyrone power plant, in western Wisconsin. 1972, they started building it. They canceled the plans in 1979. In the 1980 or so, we were required, Minnesota ratepayers ended up paying $68.7 million, almost $69 million. We, Xcel Energy ratepayers, had to pay in the 80s to pay for a plant that was started in Wisconsin but never gone very far. At that time, the plant would have only cost $1 billion. They had about $80 million, and since Minnesota customers, Minnesota PUC and so on, had never approved it, but we were on the hook for the plant that was being built in another state. So our customers have already been on the hook for a nuclear power plant that they changed their mind and didn't go ahead with. I'd suggest that this is a very important ratepayer protection provision. Urge your support.
Further discussion on the A13 amendment, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I'm a little unsure why we are debating this amendment. The bill is not about building a nuclear power plant. And I appreciate that we like to talk about things, and we ought to be free to talk about whatever we want to talk about. But what we're asking to do in this bill is to give the PUC an opportunity to talk about nuclear power. And as I understand it, we are the only state in the country that forbids our Public Utility Commission from having any discussion about nuclear power. Now, the amendment's author in her comments had made the point that adopting the bill as it was presented would be a step backward. Well, members, I would say that we are already backward. We are not allowed to have a reasonable, rational discussion about nuclear power in our Public Utilities Commission. We ought to do that. And so, members, I think rather than get distracted by a debate about potential details of some future power plant that no one is even allowed to talk about in this state, we ought to first take the step and allow the Public Utilities Commission to at least entertain the possibility of having a discussion about nuclear power.
Further discussion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I rise in opposition of this amendment as well, and it is a distraction from lifting the moratorium. But we talk about protecting ratepayers, and members, the ratepayers have been paying for Yucca Mountain for years, and somehow the federal government has diverted those funds, and you don't see that much of an uproar here. We should see an uproar all across the United States. That was the guarantee from the federal government when we issued those permits for those first nuclear plants. The ratepayers pay for renewables. There's a tax on that storage of that nuclear energy, the spent energy, that actually subsidizes all these renewables. And you don't hear people saying, wow, these renewables, you know, we're taxing people for that. But in fact, the ratepayers are taxed for that. I do believe the ratepayers need to be protected. I do believe we do a good job of that. And members, there's enough going on in the United States today that we can watch. And so if and when somebody entertains an option of a nuclear plant, we will certainly have plenty of time to react. As Senator Anderson so aptly put it, these things don't happen overnight. They take years to put in progress. And so, members, when we get something proposed in front of the PUC, the legislature will certainly have plenty of time to react and protect its ratepayers. And I know, members, with our history, we in Minnesota will protect our ratepayers, so we don't need an amendment like this on simply lifting a moratorium today.
Further discussion on the A13 amendment. Seeing no further discussion, a roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll on the A13 amendment. Secretary will close the roll. Being 24 ayes and 40 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 4. Senator Higgins.
Madam President, or are you chair now?
President.
Madam President, I have the A14 amendment.
Senator Higgins offers the A14 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Higgins moves to amend Senate File Number 4 as follows. Page 2 after line 21, insert. This is the A14 amendment.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment is very simple. It says that the certificate of need is subject to the approval of the voters in the county in which the plant or facility is proposed to be sited in an upcoming general election. Members, if you see the colored map that has been handed out to you, you will see that there are 10 places in Minnesota that had been identified as being a possible nuclear waste repository. I think that none of them is anywhere near my house, but I think that if the time comes when somebody says that we are going to be hosting a repository, the citizens of your community, your county, should have a say-so in that. It also covers the certificate of need if a new power plant is proposed. Again, the citizens should be allowed to weigh in. Now, a lot of people who have been talking in this discussion here at the Capitol this year have said the citizens support having a new nuclear power plant. this would be a way for them to weigh in. And so I'd ask for your support, and Madam President, I would like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Koch, further discussion.
Thank you, Madam President. Once again, I have to rise to oppose the amendment. I appreciate Senator Higgins' remarks. However, here again, we're trying to do the job of the PUC. We have a Public Utilities Commission, and they will have input from all interested parties should they decide to move forward. They will have discussions on cost. They will have discussions on siting. They will hear from the local governments. As a person who does live next to a nuclear power plant, I can tell you that the input from the locals is extremely important, but we don't need to do the job of the PUC here on the floor of the Senate. This is the work that will be done. There is no extra rate recovery for nuclear in this plant. There's no incentive or extra push for nuclear. It just says the PUC can consider a certificate of need, and the local governments will obviously have an input in that.
Further discussion on the A14 amendments. Senator Higgins.
Madam President, Senator Koch, the PUC is not made up of more than a handful of citizens. And it's likely they wouldn't be made up of any citizens who live anywhere near where a plant or a repository may be sited. This is taking it right back to the people. Thank you.
Further discussion on the 14 amendments. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a question for the amendment's author.
Will Senator Higgins yield?
Senator Higgins will yield.
Senator Hahn.
I'm trying to... Is it correct that this is a map dating from 1986? She's nodding affirmatively, Madam President, so I take that as a yes. And members, I would just say again, we are not talking about a power plant. We're not talking about building one. We're talking about giving the PUC the permission to talk about building one. I would suggest that this map and whatever the parameters that were used in 1986, a quarter of a century ago, they might be different today. This was certainly before we had the Yucca Mountain facility, as Senator Jungbauer pointed out, that we have paid, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars to create. I think we ought to not make a decision based on this this information that we have before us and not pass the amendment.
Senator Higgins.
Madam President, Senator Hahn, I have a report from December 2008, if you'd like to look at it. It is several, it's like 16 pages long, so we did not copy it for everyone. In it, again, Minnesota is identified as a state that has the right type of geography and would be appropriate, not my words, for citing what was then looked at to be a second repository after Yucca Mountain. And I'm happy to give this to you if you'd like it.
Further discussion on the A14 amendment. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. And just simply responding to Senator Hahn's point, truth of the matter is, and Senator Jungbauer pointed this out earlier, we've been focused on one particular site in Nevada for quite some time. But prior to having focused our attention on the Yucca Mountain site, as the authorities, as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, was looking around the country for potential waste sites to receive nuclear waste from around the country, Minnesota is one but a handful of states that was near the top of the list. That's why a map like this would date to 1986. And the fact of the matter is that we have this granite shield in northern Minnesota, and that's been there for millions of years, and it hasn't gone anywhere in the last 15 or 20 years or so. Still there, still really thick, still really hard. Been there for several million years, will be there for several million years more, and thus to some seems to be an attractive place to put nuclear waste from around the country, hence Senator Higgins' amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. And I've just got a couple thoughts here, and actually to Senator Ingebrigtsen's thoughts on that ratepayer protection for the renewable energy standard. And I was in 07, absolutely behind that, and I still am behind that. But what if you would take this amendment and turn it around to a wind siting, a wind farm in the county? It has to be approved by the general voters. Would there be as much wind in this state that we have right now? Just a thought, members. Think about it.
Further discussion on the A14 amendment? Seeing none, roll call has been requested. The secretary will take the roll on the A14 amendment. Secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes and 42 nays, the A14 is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 4, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A15 amendment.
Senator Dibble offers the A15 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend Senate file number 4 as follows. Page 2 after line 21, insert. This is the A15 amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, the A15 amendment has to do with the product that results from the reprocessing of spent nuclear waste. Under current technology, Madam Chair, what results is a plutonium and weapons-grade plutonium. We've heard from a lot of folks in the course of this debate over last year and this year, and I will be disappointed if I don't hear from Senator Jungbauer in particular, that under emerging technologies, we don't have a lot to worry about with respect to reprocessing and the resulting waste that occurs. And this just simply holds us to those arguments. The fact of the matter is, under current reprocessing that does occur in other countries. It does not occur presently, but there are those arguing that that's something we should be undertaking, and that creates some good arguments for moving ahead with new nuclear energy that we can reprocess. We can deal with the waste that way. We can reuse it for additional electrical generation and other purposes. Madam Chair and members, the fact of the matter is that reprocessing does distract us from our long-term storage efforts. Whether those are, what we call the permanent temporary or the temporary permanent, or taking a look at the long-term storage at some repository somewhere in the country. Doesn't result in a reduction of volume. We've heard that argument as well. That is not true. And it is also extremely expensive. So what this simply says, Madam Chair, is that if reprocessing is planned to be undertaken, it will not result in weapons-grade plutonium, either at the plant or elsewhere in the state. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A15 amendment, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, once again, we're getting a little deep in the weeds in this discussion. This would be potentially something that would come before the PUC, but also I'd point out that this amendment isn't necessary. Reprocessing is not allowed currently in the United States of America because of concerns about but the potential for the weapons-grade plutonium. Reprocessing is not allowed. A plant could not reprocess, so the amendment is not necessary.
Further discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Before I forget, I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call is granted. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Again, I think it is important, and this responds to an earlier argument, somehow we're doing the job of the PUC. The PUC rightly tells us every time they come before the Energy Committee that they deal with a lot of matters, and they're delegated a lot of matters by the legislature, but they're also often looking to the legislature for some specific parameters, policy direction, and guidance, and they're happy to accept that. The PUC is a citizens' committee, and it's a creature of the state, with members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. And are often looking to the legislature and the governor for the underlying policy direction that we provide to them. And Madam President and members, this simply holds us to one of the key arguments that's been offered in the course of this debate, that reprocessing is a path as a solution will help lead us to a better, cleaner, a more viable nuclear energy future. This holds us to some of those commitments, some of those arguments that we have emerging technologies that would help us down that path.
Further discussion on the A15 amendment, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I rise to question the germaneness of this amendment. It is prohibited by federal law now, so.
Advice Madam, from the Senate? I'm sorry, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. I was just going to offer advice. Thank you for asking. Obviously, I think it's a different question whether this amendment is germane or whether the issue is preempted by federal law. Those are two entirely different questions. And the issue of germaneness is about whether it's a substantially different subject or substantially different purpose. And clearly, it's not. It's very substantially related to the concerns about if we allow a new nuclear plant to be planned and built in Minnesota. It's very relevant to that question, what type of plant would it be and what type of limitations would be permitted or not permitted. We can certainly, I think it should be ruled germane for those reasons, and then we can have a debate about whether it's preempted by federal law or whether it's appropriate or not. But those are really two different questions.
Thank you. Further advice, Senator Jungbauer.
Madam President, I rise to question the germaneness and help with the question of germaneness. I believe it is not germane. It is a substantially different subject in that we are talking about opening up the discussion for a certificate of need. A certificate of need, members, means whether or not there is a necessity for a proposed new power plant that could be nuclear. In this case, we're talking nuclear. We are not talking in that certificate of need of what type of potential spent fuel there would be or what we might do with that spent fuel, because we haven't had a proposal under a certificate of need for a nuclear power plant because today it is not allowed. So this is substantially different than bringing a proposal. It gets to the whole end game if we ever get a proposal. So I believe it's not germane.
Further advice, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Very simply, this is absolutely a germane amendment. We are considering the conditions and the policies and the overarching regimen under which the Public Utilities Commission could and should consider the issuance of a certificate of need for a new nuclear power plant. We do that. We have that same guidance with the certificate of need policy on numerous other sorts of issues and matters before the PUC that reflects the policy direction as expressed by the legislature. And this is just simply one of those, similar to the amendments that were offered earlier. It's no different than that that were accepted earlier for debate and vote.
Advice, Senator Latz.
Madam President, advice. Section 2 of the underlying bill that's before us specifically addresses the issue of additional storage of spent nuclear fuel. This bill strikes the first sentence, it leaves intact the second sentence, which in the certificate of need process for additional storage of spent nuclear fuel for a facility seeking a license extension. And it says that state law says currently that the certificate of need process shall address the impacts of continued operations over the period for which approval is sought. Certainly, what is done with that spent fuel is well within the scope of current state law, subdivision 3B of 216B.243, and certainly is germane within the scope of this discussion for the amendment as well. Plus, the certificate of need process is broader than just the question of whether or not a certain amount of energy is needed and whether a particular plant will be able to supply that energy in a cost-effective manner. The whole scope, all the different issues that come up in the context of a particular plant that's proposed are addressed by the PUC in a certificate of need process, and certainly the question of how spent fuel will be handled would be within that scope. So this is germane.
Further advice, Senator Howe.
Madam President, I'll withdraw my question of germaneness. I'll speak in opposition to the amendment. It's just it's prohibited by federal law now, and I believe it's unnecessary.
Question of germaneness has been withdrawn. Any further discussion on the A15 amendment? Roll call has been requested on the A15 amendment. Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes and 42 nays, the motion does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 4. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I have the A8 amendment at the desk.
Senator Marty offers the A8 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Marty moves to amend Senate file number 4 as follows. Page 2 after line 21, insert. This is the A8 amendment.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, this is an amendment that speaks directly to the waste issue, and it would simply say that they cannot issue a certificate of need if it would increase the long-term storage in Minnesota. Again, when 1993 Prairie Island debate occurred, legislature authorized 17 temporary dry casks because we were going to have a solution to it. And we now, I think we're up to twice that many, 34, and the cap has been lifted on it. But this would simply say the existing plants can continue to have the capacity they're allowed to have, but it would say that because the industry has been telling us for years that they were going to have a solution to it, I mean, this was also the industry was going to be producing electricity. It was so too cheap to meter, I remember, was one of the things about nuclear power. None of those promises have worked out, and basically I'm afraid we're just going to be having these temporary dry casks permanently in Minnesota, and I think we shouldn't be adding to the number of it. So as the PUC would be considering certificate of need on these plants, we'd be putting this restriction on that. I ask for a roll call, ma'am.
Roll call has been requested and roll call granted. Further discussion on the A8 amendment. Senator Brown.
Madam President, I'm a little surprised at the concern over the dry cask storage, being that we have a renewable development fund that has added significant amount of money to the development of renewable energy in Minnesota. That fund has produced over $165 million. Most of that has been spent, some of it questionably. But with the removal of dry cask storage from Minnesota, that fund goes away. So I'm a little surprised that that's such a concern from Senator Marty, with that one of the benefits to the dry cask storage in Minnesota is the study and benefits that we have in the renewable energy field.
Further discussion, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I would also oppose this amendment because, again, we're trying to do the job of the PUC. The PUC already every 3 years looks at the decommissioning of these plants. Senator Howe's amendment that was put on in committee and very discussed in committee instructs the PUC to pay even closer attention to the waste issue. Senator Howe and I both represent districts with actual dry cask storage on site, so we share the concern, but the amendment is not necessary, and again, we're doing the job of the PUC members. I would encourage a no vote.
Further discussion on the A8 amendment? Roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll on the A8 amendment. Secretary will close the roll. There being 21 ayes and 43 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 4. Senator Brown.
I would like to speak in favor of this bill. This bill allows for serious discussion on the option of using mini nuclear reactors to provide very cost-effective energy for Minnesota. Again, I'm not surprised that most of the discussion has been on traditional nuclear plants. When you have a moratorium, it limits your ability to discuss these issues, and instead of being focused on the past, I would like to see this moratorium lifted so that we can have serious discussion on all our nuclear options, including mini nuclear reactors. I support this bill.
Further discussion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, it's interesting to hear people talk about when is the right time. You know, I've been here 9 years. I think it's the right time. I've heard the discussion. We talk about cost visibility. Senator Anderson talked about the cost. Well, members, if you believe in renewables, then you want the discussion on cost because you'll be able to compare it, and maybe, just maybe, renewables will start looking better. So I don't know what you're afraid of in terms of cost visibility. I think that's a great thing. Senator Anderson also said we have no need for the bill, that nobody's planning in their long term to put up a nuclear plant. Well, of course, members. Who the heck is going to put out a plan for something that's banned in the state of Minnesota? It would be ridiculous to do that, to plan for something that's not allowed. Why would you spend money and waste time? And finally, members, I think the storage issue, in my mind, is a diversion. If the people that keep talking about storage today would get on the bandwagon and have our AG go after the federal government or even contact the people at the federal government. They were the ones we paid for the storage. They were the ones that promised it. They need to get off their dead rears and get that done. And members, if you really want that done, we should be putting that in a separate bill to make sure we're all in favor of getting the federal government off their dead, whatever you want to call it, and get that storage done. This is a good bill. It opens up the discussion. Let's pass this bill and get it done with.
Further discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Jungbauer, you're getting me closer again here. Madam President, members, there's an argument that somehow this is a jobs bill, and even the unions that came forward and testified in committee said, sure, there'll be some jobs, but there won't be any jobs except for maybe for some lawyers for many, many, many years to come, and that's absolutely the truth. So I don't think we should be fooling ourselves that somehow this is our laser-like focus on jobs by debating this bill first thing out of the chute, first bill we have on the Senate floor. This is not about jobs. To the earlier point that Senator Anderson made, every single utility who has come and visited me in my office has certainly wanted to come and talk about many, many things, some that I agree with and some that I disagree with, but each of them has said, this moratorium, nuclear moratorium, that's not us. We're not interested in this. That's something else. We don't know what that's about. So it's certainly not the utilities that are coming forward and asking us to do this. So I'm a little bit stumped why we are doing this and why we're moving ahead. And the PUC, PUC is absolutely not prohibited from talking about anything under the sun that they want to talk about. So that's a canard, members. Anybody can talk about nuclear power, muse about it, plan for it, study it, do whatever they want. There is no prohibition of any sort. This is simply about pursuing a strategy and a policy that is so expensive. And what I'm astonished is why the Chamber of Commerce, why so many others who have talked so long about the burdensome cost of this mandate or this priority or that strategy, simply close their eyes to the cost of new nuclear power. And we see what's happening in other states, and we're not responding and learning those lessons. We see what's happening in Florida and Texas and the experience even of 20 years ago or more in Wisconsin. It's just astonishing. But finally, at the end of the day, I think the letter from the Prairie Island Executive Council says it best. 70 years later, and we have no solution for the core and problem of this source of energy. We have nothing to do with the waste. So what are we doing? We're putting them in casks on concrete pads in the floodplains of rivers. And there they'll sit forever. Or certainly for much, much longer than any of us will be around. So we have a good policy on the books. It's keeping us focused on a future, an energy future, that allow us to build jobs here in Minnesota, that allow us to generate energy locally, that will revitalize our own communities. It won't have us be pursuing some pie in the sky, some huge option in the future. I actually, thinking back on Senator Jungbauer's comments, I did chuckle when I read the fiscal note, which said, well, you know, no utilities are actually going to be building nuclear power, but they're going to put them in their integrated resource plans because it's going to make all their other plans look so much more affordable. This is not the time to do this, members. Thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. First off, members, I'd like to thank you all, really, seriously, for a very good discussion about nuclear. And for many of us that have been here for a while, well, I still consider myself a freshman, but when I first started, you couldn't even talk about nuclear and certainly couldn't even hardly bring it up on the floor. It was a non-starter. And now we are going to take a vote on lifting the moratorium because that is what the people are talking about out there. And they don't understand why we have this moratorium, because it's just lifting the moratorium to talk about building something, about responsible energy going forward, filling our baseload needs. So this is a very responsible move that I feel we need to move forward with. And obviously, the President of the United States feels the same way. A week ago last night, I had the honor of going to the State of the Union address with Congressman Waltz. And the President of the United States, as you can imagine, that was pretty cool, actually, when they said that, and he walked down and gave a speech, but he mentioned the responsibility of the United States to address our energy needs, which included nuclear and clean coal. So that's all we're doing here, members. We're having a very good discussion, and we're going to lift this moratorium because it's the right thing to do, and that's what the general public wants. We are going to continue to be very responsible and give the responsibility to the PUC where it belongs. So again, I appreciate your vote on Senator Koch's bill, and let's move forward.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, if the PUC was very interested in this, if the utilities were very interested in this, they'd be here at the Capitol. They are not banned from talking about it, and I'll guarantee you they got the clout that if they wanted to come here and say, we need this to be removed, it would happen. It's not that they can't talk about it. And Senator Jungbauer, I know you want to push the federal government to study, to find a permanent repository for it. There's a reason it hasn't happened under the last 6 or 7 administrations of both parties, and that is because there's not going to be one, because there's no way to guarantee the safety that you can secure it for millennia. There's just not, we don't have a way to do it. So they're not going to find a way, so we'll keep waiting with our temporary storage. That wasn't going to be a problem by the same people who told us it was going to be so cheap, too cheap to meter nuclear power. And again, it's never proved to be that way. But I have a A16 amendment at the desk, Madam Chair.
Senator Marty, could you repeat the number?
A-16.
Senator Marty offers the A-16 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Marty moves to amend Senate file number 4 as follows. Page 2 after line 13, insert. This is the A-16 amendment.
Madam President, members, this is an amendment that would prohibit the use of a public option for insurance for nuclear power plants. We've had a lot of discussion of public options for insurance on health care issues. But this is one that we don't ever talk about when we're talking about the cost of nuclear power. And the Price-Anderson Act, which has been around for as long as nuclear power has been, basically is a publicly taxpayer-funded insurance plan for nuclear power plants. And there's a reason for it, and it's because it would be awfully costly to buy private insurance to regulate one of these. And I just think that this is one of many, many subsidies over the years for nuclear power. If the federal government spent a tenth as much on renewable energy, we wouldn't be having these discussions, but we're moving forward in those areas. I just think it's worth that we ought to say, let's be upfront about what the subsidies are and let's remove this public option for insurance.
Discussion on the A16 amendments, Senator Koch.
Members, thank you, Senator Marty, for another amendment. Again, I would just oppose this. I think this discussion could be had at the PUC with experts and constituents and the people that are necessary for this discussion. This is not a discussion for the floor. We are simply talking about allowing this to be on the table as an option, nuclear power as an option, as a part of Minnesota's energy portfolio, and I would oppose the amendment.
Further discussion regarding the A16 amendment. Senator Marty renews his motion on the A16 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 4. Senator DeCrife.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to speak in favor of this bill, and I actually work around and in nuclear power plants around the country. And I want to speak to what I think is a very safe work environment. It's a safe place to work. I want to speak to the fact that I think we have in the conversations I've had with principals around the nuclear plants, some VPs of some of the power companies, they tell me the casks that we currently have are designed to protect this nuclear waste for over 100 years. Now, around the world, we have other companies or countries that are recycling. We're not allowed to talk about that in America. That's something that we might have to change. We might have to change the conversation here in America. But one other thing I want to talk to is the fact of how highly subsidized some forms of power, electrical power, are. In fact, just one point that I want to make is wind energy is subsidized at around 10 times the amount of nuclear. Nuclear power is not subsidized at a very high rate from our federal government because of its efficiency. So what this bill really talks to is just laying this one other form of power, one other option on the table for our power companies, and that's something that I think we have to make sure that we give our power companies is every option to make the best decisions for us in the years to come. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 4, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to respond, if I may, to the last comment. And Senator, I guess I would really like to see your sources of information. The fact is that nuclear and power and fossil fuels subsidies have dwarfed those for renewables for decades. And the nuclear industry is actually a mature industry. And normally, you know, it's okay, in my view, to offer some support for a new emerging technology if you think it's in the public interest. And that's why, in some cases, I would support some kinds of subsidies for renewable energy while it's getting off the ground and becoming mature. But the fact is the nuclear industry has been around for decades and decades, pretty much almost as long as I have been. And they're actually asking for higher subsidies the further along they get. And in recent years, they're asking for more public subsidies than they have in the past. So that's just really kind of a backwards way for a mature energy source to operate. And secondly, you mentioned that the CAS, I don't believe they're warrantied for 100 years, but if they last for 100 years, that's great. Unfortunately, the waste will be toxic for thousands of years. And so again, I agree with Senator Marty that I honestly don't think there is a solution for what happens when that toxic waste runs out its life. So I would urge members to vote no.
Further discussion on Senate File 4, Senator Howe.
Madam President, I rise to speak in support of Senate File 4. We did offer an amendment to that bill that as part of the normal decommissioning process that nuclear generating facilities in Minnesota do, will include in there the cost of storage for up to 200 years. And then that recommendation, the PUC will bring a recommendation in front of the body of any future legislation that may be needed to be to address the cost or operational needs of storage in our state. So I think Senate File 4 does move the discussion forward. And I would ask that the members of this body vote in the affirmative for Senate File 4. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Kelash.
Madam Chair, I'm opposing this bill. Part of it is that this nuclear energy is old technology compared to what we have coming online. The solar energy industry is growing. It is the new jobs. We need to encourage those new jobs in the state of Minnesota. One of the problems with doing nuclear plants is we also have to figure out how we're going to do transmission lines and all the rest of it that creates a burden on our taxpayers and has been a constant fight in Minnesota every time we try to add a new one. So I just think this is going backwards instead of moving the state forward into the renewable energy that we really have to and the ability to get that closer to the source of the need of the power. Thanks.
Further discussion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President and members. It's always interesting on these discussions, you know, especially that one. We're talking about nuclear moving us backwards. It's the nuclear that exists today, members, is 1950s technology. We certainly need new technology. And as the President said, we need all kinds of new technology. We're making great strides in renewable energy, certainly. And as I said before, the new nuclear plants may actually make renewables look affordable. But to understand the new nuclear technology that's actually on the ground right now that they're working on, it has about only 3% of the storage requirements for spent fuel. It's much safer. It can't be reprocessed into plutonium, weapons-grade plutonium. So there's all these things in technology that are coming up. And even if, members, somebody applied for a permit tomorrow, it would take about 15 years to put something on the ground. And so that technology would be refined. Members, we ought to be moving ourselves forward. We ought to be number one in the world. Don't you get a little tired of India and China taking over that position because we are going to sit and argue about having moratoriums on things that, yes, maybe we should have had a moratorium on 1950s technology, but let's move into the future and let somebody propose something on new technology.
Secretary will give Senate File 4 its third reading.
Senate File Number 4, a bill for an act relating to energy regulating and monitoring decommissioning of nuclear power plants and disposal of used fuel, third reading.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I support the bill and urge you to vote for it. In the course of the debate we've had, and I wanted to make a comment on a point that was recently made. Senator DeKreif was talking about the subsidies, and Senator Anderson, I believe, had a response to that, and she was interested in where the numbers came from. I just went out and Googled renewable energy subsidies, and the first thing that came up was an article that was printed in December of 2010 in the Wall Street Journal. It talks about, first of all, that wind energy accounts for about 1% the total electricity generated in the country, and it makes the point that it is highly inefficient, and so, and this is a quote, it's no wonder that wind and solar energy require at least 20 times more in government subsidies per unit of electricity generated than the average for coal and natural gas. And members, again, this bill is not about a power plant. It's not about building anything. It's about giving the Public Utility Commission and our state an opportunity to talk about a power source that I believe will be the standard in the future. It's hard for me to believe that a technology as old as windmills is the thing that we're turning to for our electrical generation needs. I urge your support of the bill.
Discussion on Senate File 4, Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Hahn, I just had to respond to your comment about when you did mention you compared it to coal and other things that whatever website you had said it was more subsidies for. My amendment here on the insurance, if you had voted for that amendment, I'll guarantee you there wouldn't be any nuclear power plant because we wouldn't be talking $5 or $6 billion. You wouldn't have a price tag to add to it because you couldn't buy private insurance for that kind of amount. That subsidy alone is bigger than all the other subsidies.
Further discussion, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, all members, for the really great discussion. I would like to thank particular Senator Rosen and the Energy Committee members who've been working on this. Well, some are new, but many of us have been working on this for several years. Members, as we traveled around the state this past year, as we heard in committee and energy just yesterday, as we heard in Hibbing on Friday, businesses support lifting this ban, not because they are closing their eyes, but because they need us as policymakers to be open to all the options. We heard about them on taxes. We heard about them on regulation. We heard about from them on regulation and permitting. But we also heard from them that energy, electricity, which is literally the go juice for industry and manufacturing and businesses in the state of Minnesota, needs to be reliable and it needs to be affordable. And so what we are talking about today is taking a very small step towards adding to Minnesota's energy portfolio, putting all options on the table. I'd like to close with a quote from the State of the Union by President Obama on January 25th. President Obama said, "Some folks want wind and solar. Others want nuclear, clean coal, and natural gas. To meet this goal, we'll need them all. And I urge Democrats and Republicans to work together to make it happen." So, members, I would just urge Democrats and Republicans here today on the floor, let's take this small step together. Let's add to Minnesota's energy portfolio. And thank you very much.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 4. Secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 14 nays, Senate File 4 has passed and its title agreed to. Moving to the 13th order of business under announcements of Senate interest, we do have several excuses for the day. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session: Tomasoni, Goodwin, Sieben for the entire session. Are there announcements of Senate interest? Senator Perry.
Madam President, I'd just like to inform the members of the Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans, we will meet promptly at 1:45 in room 123. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. And just to remind you, Rochester Day today, going to be a lot of folks from back home up here. Great party down at the Armory a little later, so please try to attend if you can.
Further announcements, Senator Koch.
Then, Madam President and members, if there's no further announcements, I would move that we adjourn until Thursday, tomorrow, February 3rd at 11 a.m.
Senator Koch has moved. The Senate adjourned until Thursday, February 3rd at 11 a.m. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.